What's up, guys?
Hopefully that music wasn't terrible. Hopefully it came through okay. I'm Kimball, the notorious Kimball. We got our 103rd interview today with Othello, which should be pretty good. I've been here almost 4 years, and I've seen Othello in the comments going strong, going hard. I don't think I've ever actually talked to him in his space. And one thing I love about doing these interviews, a lot of them are with experiencers, which are great. It's my favorite. But often, too, I'll just talk to researchers or people who think a lot about the topic. And those are great in a different way because it's a little more back and forth, I guess you could say. I sort of pride myself with the experiencer interviews in, like, that's not a place or a space literally to, like, scrutinize people's experiences or judge them in any way. It's kind of an honor, honestly. I know that sounds cliche, but it's an honor to, like, provide a space for experiencers to just tell their story, right, without judgment. And I'm fascinated by those, by people's stories, by their accounts, and that's the place for that. And there's not a lot of real debate necessary for those accounts. I have my own sort of experiences that I've tried to pick apart myself, but it's kind of like there's a time and a place for that, and I don't really like to do that with experiencers. But when it's a serious thinker or a researcher, like Othello, it's kind of a different mode, right? And it's more about conversation and back and forth, and you can engage in some, like, constructive debate in those types of spaces. And I anticipate that's what today will be a little bit more about. Othello, welcome. Are you there? Can you hear me?
I sure am. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. So, are you okay? Can I just address you as Othello? Is there something else you'd like to go by?
Othello's just fine, yeah. It's not my real name, but it'll do for this purpose.
Nice. Okay, and then we're good for about a couple hours, right? I want to be respectful of your time.
I think food pending. If I can get my partner to feed me some food while I'm here, I might be able to stay longer, so we'll see what happens. 2 hours at least, and if there's a big crowd and a lot of good discussion going on, I don't want to cut that short. So if we're rolling and it's feeling good, I'll stick around.
Okay, awesome. Let's just get started on, like, telling us a little bit about who you are, right? Your background and what got you thinking on this topic and writing about it.
Yeah. So I think my story is going to sound pretty similar. A lot of people have a story kind of like mine. Lifelong lover of science fiction, astronomy. As a kid, I looked up at the stars a lot and just was with absolute certainty that there was life out there. I would just be, like, dumbfounded that the rest of the sky is just filled with stars and what I saw is being filled with life. And my interest in UFOs and anomalous stuff and ET stuff didn't really start accelerating until right around 2001, when around that time I started to listen to Art Bell Radio. I don't know, there are probably a lot of Art Bell fans in this room, but that was what got me into the sort of the phenomenon and parapsychology, you know, ghost hunting, all that stuff. You know, you name it, I was listening to it. I was definitely interested in it. And then what happened was Stephen Greer's National Press Club happened, and that was like a bomb went off. I remember thinking, oh, my God, here it is. Disclosure. It's finally happening. Of course, that didn't turn out to be the case, and my opinion about Greer has definitely changed over the years. But at the time, I bought his book. I was buying a lot of UFO-related books, and so my interest was academic, and it was very much hopeful. It was very positive. I fell into a lot of the sort of common tropes that, you know, if the aliens are super advanced, then that means that they must have superior morality. That's a very common argument people make. And I was right in line with that, and I was right in line with Greer and everything that he was promoting. Over the years, once I started to learn more about abduction experiences and how traumatic they were. And also, I had a friend who's had some of these negative experiences with NHI. I actually interviewed him here on this platform. If you dig through my post history, you can find it. His name's Balaric. That's his online name. But I started to hear a much more nuanced and also decidedly negative aspect of the phenomenon that started to turn me in a new direction. And then I eventually found this body of work called the Allies of Humanity Briefings, which I link in my resources page. I have a ton of books and stuff on there you guys can check out. But that was another piece of material that got me to think about NHI contact in a completely different way. So my thinking has transformed over the years as I've researched this and as I've listened to experiencers and I've listened and read the work of, let's see, what are some names here? I need to make sure I'm name dropping the right people. Carla Turner, David M. Jacobs, Timothy Good. Those are some names that I've been curating as well. And they tell a very different story about our relationship with NHI in the more modern era. What I didn't really do a lot of, and I defer to any other expert in this area, I don't do a lot of deep historical research on NHI contact, so I wouldn't call myself a UFO historian. I'm thinking of myself as more as a modern day sort of philosopher and thinker about humanity and its relationship to non-human intelligence, with emphasis on an assumption based on biology. That is, experiencers describe physical beings with, you know, appendages, eyes, nose, that sort of thing. And I'm looking at this from a biological point of view. Now, I know that phenomena goes far and wide, and the experiencers community have a lot of different takes on this, takes on what NHI mean and what they are, what they represent, where they're from. My position is more about what is the correct response that humanity has in regards to this topic, especially when we don't have information, when we're starved for information, when we only have experiencer stories to go on, and we have limited data to work with. So I'm trying to kind of promote the what I think of as the a right way to think about this. So that's kind of what I started doing here on this platform back in 2022-2023, and started to just write my thoughts and feelings on it, and sometimes angrily, which is not always a helpful way to communicate, but I don't hold back, especially if I think that there's what I consider to be a dangerous idea or a problematic idea about humanity's relationship with non-human intelligence. And I think there are a lot of problems with the discussions that I'm hearing. Although I will say I'm hearing some encouraging changes in the tone and the nature of those conversations, at least on this platform. But there are still people in the world who are speakers on this topic that I think are leading people in the wrong direction. So I'm just this tiny little person with my tiny little boat, with my little rudder, trying to steer this massive conversation in a direction that I think is better for humanity and better for our outcome as a species.
That was awesome. Yeah, I think it is an important conversation. If there is a reality behind some of this phenomena and there is an actual non-human intelligence on the other side, I think it is, you know, it's an important thing to think about. And I don't think I'm smart enough to do it, but I think people like you, I think a philosopher is a good way to kind of self-title, because these are pretty deep questions, but it's a really complicated and deep topic too. And hopefully we can get into some of that with this space. Because there's, I mean, there is some backstory and some like, some gap to fill in as far as you and how you came to all this. I think you just did a, you know, part of it, but this won't be the typical format I do where we wait till the end for Q&A. You know, we'll probably have a few more minutes at least of just getting to know you, and I would like to sort of dive into how you come to some of the conclusions you have. But then after that, anyone else is free to come up and engage a fellow here with conversations or what have you. So yeah. I'll just throw that out there. Anyone's welcome to come up once we get going here.
And questions are good. I don't have a format or a list of things to talk about. I've sent you some material that I DM'd you, but feel free to ask me anything. The only thing I won't talk about is like details of my personal life, but I'm happy to talk about how I came into the subject and what's shaped my thinking, and any also resources and information that I can provide there.
Right. Well, and absolutely, I'm going to respect your privacy to the degree that you need it. A question I do usually ask experiencers and even researchers or a philosopher like yourself on the topic is certain parts of their background that I feel may, like you just said, kind of inform their thinking. So I'm curious, did you grow up religious or spiritual in any way?
No. In fact, I grew up what I would describe as sort of closed-minded atheist. My mom put me in a Sunday school for a day just to see, we lived near a church, and she was just looking for daycare options, and she thought, well, why don't we try this? And I hated it. I was in a room with a bunch of kids, and we were doing a worksheet and filling it in about God and Jesus, and I was like, what the hell is this? I didn't understand it. I cried to my mom and said, never send me back there again. And she wasn't, you know, she wasn't trying to indoctrinate me, but she was trying to just find something for me to do as a little kid. So that never happened again. And throughout my life, I didn't really have any strong church affiliations. I did a little bit of youth group stuff, but at no point has anyone tried to infuse within me a religious framework of any kind. No one has lectured at me. No one has tried to coerce me into a religious way of thinking. And because of that, because I was a little, you know, scientist and science, little science guy, and a weird kid to boot, definitely a lot of strange things that I said and did, some that are kind of woo and out there as well. I developed kind of a very rigid way of thinking about the world and a very scientific one. And it wasn't until my teenage years, maybe it was drug related, I don't know what triggered this, but I had a very huge shift where I had something like an epiphany about the divine and about other realms. And so my thinking as a teenager versus today is completely different. I no longer think in those terms. I try not to think in absolutes. I believe in an afterlife. I believe in reincarnation. I believe in a divine presence or creator or something that you could label God. But I stop short of trying to label it more than that, because the word God is extremely loaded and it means so many things to so many people. So I tend to speak in very general terms like the divine or spirituality, because those things do have deep meaning for me. It's just that I don't incorporate them into my life as intimately as some religious people might. I don't do daily prayer. I don't have a practice. I don't have a rigid dogmatic way of thinking. And I find a lot of dogmatic thinking problematic, especially specifically in Christianity. But I do see a common thread among religions that I think I probably have in some way incorporated into my life. So when I speak with people who are religious or non-religious, I completely understand and respect their position. And I would never presume to tell them what is or is not real. And that applies to experiencers as well. I have my opinion about what experiencers report. And I do think that we should think about what those experiences might mean. But I have no idea what experiencers really did or did not have experience in their life. It would not be my place to say. So I can only speak for myself.
Yeah, yeah.
But I hope that gives you a good answer here. I know I'm being kind of broad.
No, that was really good. Yeah, closed-minded atheism is that's a fun term right there. I think I know what you're getting at.
Yeah, it's pretty common, and I also understand it because I used to think that way. Now I've had too many experiences myself that I cannot explain that lead me to believe that material reality as we know it is not the ultimate reality.
And, yeah, yeah.
And there's no doubt in my mind that an advanced intelligence or NHI could also understand that and might use that to some advantage or to our disadvantage, let's say.
Yeah, that was really good. And again, I want to be sensitive to your information. I'm not trying to dox your age, but just for context, you know, you mentioned the psychedelic experiences. And that often can affect, I've seen it affect a lot of my friends who are atheists, and then they sort of have a change of heart, I guess you could say, or a paradigm flip on the whole God thing.
Yeah.
But Just for, like, when Greer, I know you mentioned, and I put this up in the top, a link to his National Press Club event in May of 2001, but can you give us just a rough, like, I guess in context to that, when did you have some of these psychedelic experiences that you mentioned?
Hey, sorry, I was just doing some math. Not meth, math. I was doing math. I was calculating my relative age. So the 2001 press conference was in 2001. I was 16 or 17 at the time. By then, I hadn't done any psychedelics. I later in my life experimented a little bit with them. I had a history of anxiety problems, which largely I've overcome, actually, luckily, without medication. But at the time, the psychedelic experiences I had were quite a bit more varied and sometimes traumatic for me. But that was, I think, maybe a necessary part of my development as a person. And I went on to really kind of get into some of the rave party drug scene, which helped me break out of my shell because I was a little kind of socially awkward as a kid. And so that helped me kind of evolve as a person. I don't know if I'm answering your question. I'm just kind of waxing on. Yeah,
no, that's good.
Period of my life.
I just,
sure.
I kind of want to dive in. I want to get into how. So you mentioned the Greer's thing, right? And I think a lot of us know Greer's position on this whole topic, which is like, you know, he's often critical of anyone in the government trying to, you know, push for some kind of disclosure event. And he's saying it's you know, they have the threat narrative, and so he sort of has a little more like the NHI or benevolent sort of position.
Yes. You know, I think if you want to hear an opinion that I think aligns almost exactly with mine, Tom Montauk here, who's in the space, wrote a really great synopsis of everything that Greer said that was correct and probably coming from a good place, but then also everything that was wrong with it. So where he deviated, where he went astray. So a lot of what the things that Greer said, I still agree with, but then he takes it too far. He starts adding extra stuff that I think doesn't fit the data, does not fit the experiencers and what they've been reporting. And I think that he's kind of like got blinders on now. And I don't know whether he's influenced by NHI directly or indirectly. All I can say is he's doubling, tripling, and quadrupling down on his position. And I see no reason to believe that will ever change. And I think it's caused big problems for him because people have been giving him pushback ever since, right around the Bill Cassidy Project Avalon days. Even those earlier interviews, he was getting pushback.
Yeah, and I'm on Tom's page now. There's a lot of content there. I don't know if, Tom, if you could post that paper that Ophel is referencing in the thread here.
It was a comment here on X, so I'm sorry I don't have it handy. And if Tom's able to dig it up and throw it into the nest or into as a reply, I think that would be a good little tidbit to read, because it basically sums up everything I would have said about Stephen Greer.
Okay. Well, he gave us a thumbs up, so hopefully he can find that. I'd like to read through that. But yeah, I guess what I'm getting at is I think it's interesting, and I think listeners will too, that you haven't had any specific paranormal experiences.
Not with NHI. I have had experiences that I can't explain that were consciousness based and that were not drug induced. It was a sleep paralysis situation happened where I was taking a nap and woke up but was paralyzed, and I could hear the AM radio clear as day in my right ear. Like, I could have described it to you in explicit detail. My left ear was deaf, and in my right ear was just a radio signal. And it was like, government spending is at an all-time high. I remember I was like listening to it. I was like, is the radio on? And then I woke myself up, and it was dead silent. Radio's not on at all. And I go and turn on the radio, and it's the same program I had been listening to in my head. So what the hell is that? I have no idea. But what I can say is, The human brain is a miracle, and there's more we don't know than we do. And who's to say what that was? Very strange. I don't know how to categorize that experience. I wouldn't call it life-changing, but it definitely sticks out.
Yeah. Some of those, I've had experiences too in like hypnagogic states, in or out of sleep, that I can't quite explain. But I think you're right. The human mind is pretty intense and can produce a lot of things. I'm not saying that's exactly what it was, but just real quick on that experience, are you aware of Lucille? I think it was Lucille Ball. She was driving down the street.
I've heard that.
And she was a. Damn, what was the name of that show? I Love Lucy, right?
Oh, Lucille Ball, the actress. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, yeah.
And I think it was like her fillings, like the fillings in her teeth were like channeling in some of the AM channels. Absolutely. So I'm not sure.
It could be something as boring as that. But what was strange is that when I slipped into that hypnagogic state, I actually slipped back into it and the radio came back. So it was like something was happening. Something was being tuned. I don't exactly.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So that's really not, that doesn't hold a candle to some of the experiences that others have had. Many of them who might even be in this room who would laugh at what little experience I have in that regard. So that's definitely not something that I bring to the conversation, but I'm happy to talk about anything really. Nothing's off topic.
Yeah. I mean, I sort of consider myself a novice too when it comes to experiences. I've had my own, but they're like tame, right? Compared to a lot of people in here, I'm sure. But I guess what I was driving at is it is interesting, and I think listeners will want to know as well, at least your response to, you know, you haven't had any intense experiences, paranormal experiences with NHI.
Yes.
Yet you do think and write quite a bit about the topic. And so
yes,
you can understand sort of the question people might have, like if you haven't experienced this firsthand,
right?
How are you coming to these conclusions?
Right. And so you might also rightly ask, what gives me the right to talk about this? And the truth is, nothing gives me the right to talk about this. I think that that's okay. I think that you can think of me as a member of the human species who's hearing from other members of his own species that they're being abducted, that things are happening to them, and some of it's, they say, is good, some of it's bad. And I think as a citizen, as a member of the human family, it is absolutely my right to question that and to ask about it and to think about it and to draw conclusions. And one of the things that I think is problematic with this topic and sometimes with people in these discussions is they have this almost dogmatic insistence that thou shalt not draw conclusions. And I think that that's a bad argument. And the reason I say this is not because you must always draw conclusions. What I'm saying is that you should draw some conclusions, and the conclusions that you draw should position you in a way that protects your species, that is about defending us from unwanted incursions. And my concern about experiences, direct experiences, especially with NHI, is that all the time when I hear about what experiencers go through, there seems to be a lot of mental manipulation going on, either with memory, emotion, or you name it. They have
time
dilation. So what I hear when I hear these experiences is someone going through something that is completely out of their control, totally rewrites their understanding of what's going on, what's real and what's not. And also there's an infiltration of some kind, either mental infiltration of ideas and imagery or physical penetration, you know, implantation, sometimes even insemination, like it goes dark. It gets really bad. So when I hear about that, I'm thinking about somebody who could be in a state of trauma. And so in order to make sense of that, I think I value the fact that I'm not an experiencer, because I'm able to speak sort of from a clean slate, someone that hasn't been unduly influenced, or so I like to think. But I think it's okay to say that I'm also not immune to that influence. And I don't think I am. It would be quite arrogant of me to say I'm the clean slate and I know what's going on. No, definitely not saying that. I am saying, however, that for my own well-being and sense of solidarity, I'm glad that I have not been put through an experience like that, and I would not want such an experience. And I don't actually believe that I want non-human intelligence interaction to be an experience, like a psychedelic mind fuck. I would rather it be a conversation, like I'm standing in front of another being conversing in my language, and that I'm not under duress, that I'm not having my mind influenced, that I'm not, you know, paralyzed or unable to move or unable to speak. I want my faculties intact. And I find it curious that people who have these experiences don't seem to have a, some of them at least don't seem to have any qualms with that. But they use a number of justifications to make that okay in their mind for good reason. It's sometimes if it's traumatic, you need a way to cope with that. I think some people might be interpreting their experience in a way that helps them to cope with that. And I say more power to them. I don't think anybody should have to live with trauma, and they should find healthy ways to deal with it. But I do think one of the side effects of that is that they come away with conclusions about the intent of the NHI that I think may not reflect what's really going on. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. And so, let's see, I'm trying to figure out which way to do this. Okay, so I guess there's, and I like the way you put it, actually. I've never heard anyone phrase it that way, but thou shalt not come to conclusions thing, right? That's a good sort of rebuttal to the classic. And I think this is a pretty strong point. Because we, none of us, right, even if you and I were both intense experiencers, which I don't think either of us claim to be, how are we supposed to know what the intent of this these NHI are, you know?
Yeah, great.
And so you're engaging inherently in some degree of anthropomorphism, right? Where we're sort of projecting our values, our intents. You mentioned biology earlier. And so how do you sort of get around that, or how do you deal with that?
It's a good question. And the truth is, I've never met an alien, so I'm not speaking with authority here, nor am I going to make the claim that I know and understand all of NHI intent. That's certainly not the case. But I also am just working with the information that I have. And if you just look at NHI activity, that is, what are they doing? And where are they going? Who are they taking? And when they take people, what are they doing to them? If you just limit your information to just the physical fact of these encounters and what they're doing, I think it paints a quite a clear picture that there's a genetic component, a hybridization component, acquisition of biological resources, a concern for our use of nuclear weapons, a concern for our planet's biosphere. Like, a lot of these themes start to come up and start to resonate really strongly when you look at it from that perspective. What I think is interesting is that when you start mixing in people's personal interpretations of their encounter, it destroys the picture gets fuzzy instantly. It just goes to mud. Suddenly, we have no idea what's going on. There's conflicting information. You have some people saying it's positive, some people saying it's negative. And all that other stuff, the abduction, hybridization, insemination, biological resource stuff, just gets sort of muted, and it gets spread out. So that makes me a little bit suspicious, because if a being can manipulate your thoughts and emotions, and then it can make you think something that isn't true. It can make you think that what happened to you was for a good reason. It can make what happened to you feel like it was purposeful and for your benefit or for society's benefit.
So deception. Yeah.
So does that mean that all NHI experiences are bad? No, I couldn't make that claim. But what I can say is that the picture that I'm seeing from the information that I have available, that is from the abduction literature, at least modern, especially modern phenomena since like the 1930s, what emerges to me is something that is coercive, manipulative, exploitative, and not honoring our sovereignty, not honoring us as an independent species that has its own rights and privileges. It's not behaving in that manner. Now, I don't know whether that's anthropomorphizing or not. But I try not to try to get into the mind of the alien. I don't know what they're thinking, but if I classify them as a life form of some kind, then I can make really basic guesses about what their needs are and what their interests are. And if I think if you do that from a biological perspective, you do start to see that things line up really nicely. It starts to explain some of their behavior. And it also explains the anomalous nature of their appearances and behavior as well, because when you factor in advanced technology, which is to us going to look like magic, which I'm sure everyone's heard that phrase, then in a way, kind of all bets are off. Like once we're dealing with something that is involving technology that's beyond our comprehension, that can manipulate our thoughts and emotions, at least in close proximity, then we're woefully inept in our ability to classify and understand their intent, which is why I try to remove the personal opinion part and just look at their actions, because I do believe that action denotes intent. And I think that that's the right approach for this problem, let's say.
I see. Okay, so you're basically just saying, look, if they have the ability and have historically kind of shown that they engage in some kind of trickster energy deception, right, where they can make you see or feel something that may or may not be authentic or like actually the case, you're kind of taking a risk-averse position.
Yeah, sort of like if someone broke into your house, you wouldn't say, oh, I bet this must be their house. You could say, no, they're an intruder in my home. You know, I think it's okay, I think it's okay to make what I call a safe assumption. That is an assumption that if you're wrong, nothing bad happens. But the problem, I think, is that people are making unsafe assumptions that if they're wrong, bad things will happen.
So I
think it's like a positional thing. It's like making a safe wager, I think, is a good idea for humanity. Even if you are certain that they're here for a good purpose, I think you should stand with me and demand transparency and accountability and say, okay, let's all agree that, like, we're not ready for this. We're confused. We don't know who's here for what purpose. So all of you who are here, can you please stop and leave? Because we're clearly not prepared for this. Now, some will say, yeah, I'm prepared. I'm spiritually evolved. We all need to come together. And it's like, hold on the brakes a little bit, guys. Like, we don't need to rush into something as a species with more unknowns than knowns. Like, we're completely in the dark. And we're not even space travel. We're not spacefaring. We're trapped here. Like, we are so low on the totem pole, technologically speaking, that it seems quite foolish to me to just rush headlong into this, into the dark, with only positive experiences guiding us. Like, that's not how we survive as a species. We survived as a species by looking for danger and being prepared for bad outcomes. It's a prepared species that survives. It's one that's vigilant, not one that's open-minded and like just everyone come here and come shake hands with me. Like, that's not the right approach. That isn't to say that we can't have positive, beneficial contact with species in the future. I just think right now we're not dealing with positive ones. We're dealing with negative ones. I've leapt ahead a little bit in our conversation here, so you can rein me back in, but that's where.
No, this is really, really good. And I kind of, okay, so there are a few metaphors for this, you know, and you referenced one that I've heard Elizondo use as well, right? The intruder into your home and you see these muddy footprints, sort of like, what do you do from that point? There's also sort of the common metaphor that I've put in the promo graphic for this space. But the indigenous people, right, welcoming a foreign race on ships, right? And yeah. I think especially right now, it's safe to say a lot of us don't feel super hopeful about the human race right now. A lot of things seem to be going awry.
That's right.
And I want to hear you. And then I also want to invite anyone who wants to come up and ask questions or engage in the conversation, feel free to request. This isn't the typical experiencer space, but what do you think it is? Like, why do we have a propensity for invitation, I'll call it, this curiosity for some other race to come along and help us?
Well, there's a lot of different reasons. First of all, we're all educated in the bloody history of humanity's past. We do have a bloody past. And there's a lot about human nature that we tend to get down on ourselves for. There's a lot of nihilistic kind of thinking about, well, humanity is irrevocably damaged. All it can do is be violent, and we'll never overcome these tendencies. And we need a guiding hand from beyond to come in and set things right. And that's a very strong belief that comes not just from secular thinking, but I think it comes from science fiction tropes, and it comes from religion. I mean, so much of religion is about salvation and is about the divine. There's nothing wrong with that idea in principle, but the problem I think we're having is that the beings who are here know that we are looking for that and are only too happy to play the part. I don't think that our history, our religious beliefs, our technological ability, our biology is a secret to them. In fact, I think they know us as better than we know ourselves. I think they have an explicit and long understanding of all of our weaknesses and our tendencies, and they can use that to our advantage. So we're not in a position where we can outsmart them in that way. Let me get back to your point, and your question was about the bloodiness of human history. So yeah, we have had bloody periods in our past, but I don't think that is like an aberration. If I had to guess, I would say species like us with our level of intellect and intelligence probably pass through developmental phases just like that. It wouldn't surprise me at all if the beings involved here had their own bloody history of war and conquest. The history of conquest on our planet, I think, is the key to understanding a lot of what's going on in our case, though. When you look at what happens when an advanced culture or technologically advanced species encounters a less advanced one, and just ask yourself the question, in that kind of encounter, who comes out on top? Who benefits? And if you look at human history, although it is a sample size of one, it's a very long history with a lot of opportunities for things to happen. And it seems to me that in every case, when you have a more advanced group, they take over the small one. They spread to new places. They find resources and take over. And they may come with good intentions, or they may think that they have God on their side. But, you know, the culture that they come in to take advantage of just gets squashed and pushed aside, let's say. So I think that that's the way I frame what's going on with us. Not everyone does, but I think that that's a safer position to think from and think, okay, we're not the ones with the advanced technology, and we're going to be making a lot of bad assumptions about them. And I actually made a comic series that kind of illustrates this point. I don't know if you want to throw any of those up in the nest, but if you look at my resources page, scroll down, you'll see Naive Natives, a bunch of silly little one-panel comics that I did to kind of illustrate a lot of that sort of assumptions that people are making about NHI, to me, mirror some of the assumptions that Native Americans might wrongly have made about ships arriving on the horizon. So I think that there is a parallel there.
Yeah, definitely. I'm trying to, let's see. I don't know if it's the Kardashev scale, but maybe a rebuttal to that that I've heard people make, I believe, maybe it's not the Kardashev, but essentially like, when a race, especially when you're talking about interplanetary or maybe even interdimensional, if a civilization or a race reaches a certain scale, right, a type 2 or type 3, like they transcend sort of this biological domination, resource extraction phase, they could actually have these benevolent sort of intents, right? Intentions. They're not here simply to extract, but I still agree, like maybe not, you know? And so you're taking this more risk averse position, which and I don't see the issue there.
So I also want to add there too, which is if there are beings who don't need resources, don't need biological resources, then they're not the ones who are here, because those ones are taking resources. There's a hybridization effort that the David Jacobs material and Carla Turner make it really clear that there is an ongoing alien-human hybridization effort, which is a biological process. That isn't to say I must therefore only allow biological explanations. All I'm really getting at is, to me, that behavior denotes another intent, and that intent is based in biology. So I think it makes more sense to reason from that rather than to fill in the blank about what else they could be up to. I mean, if they hybridize with us, That means they're immune to our diseases. They pass for human, and they can instantly just walk up to a podium and say, I am Zotar. I am your creator. You know, we're related to you. And oh, look, your finest scientists have tested my DNA. It's a perfect match. Like, game, set, match, guys. How the hell would we possibly know otherwise? We would just instantly fall to our knees. Yes, you're our creator. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. I'm just saying that's the power of genetics. That's the power of engineering. And I think that we're dealing with beings with those powers. And while I don't think it's going to necessarily play out the way that I just described, it just goes to show what a bad position we're in, where we are not in a position to untangle that, which is why I'm nervous about using historical ET contact as a way of tracing lineage to the past, because these beings probably know our past too and could easily play any part or role we would want them to play, especially if their DNA matches. Like, how would we know? So it just gets really tricky when we're dealing with, again, advanced technology. We're too easy to outsmart in that regard. So we have to be skeptical, I think. If a being says, look at my DNA, it matches, I'll say, what about all those thousands of people you abducted and took the DNA from? And, like, what were you up to? Care to explain that? I would encourage that if we're going to talk about
genetic assimilation program.
Yeah, well,
genetic assimilation would be how they would try to conquer us.
Yes.
Or adapt to our planet. Because if they come from a planet with different gravity, they wouldn't be built for it. But if they used local genetics to try to create something that they could utilize, that would make a lot more sense.
It does make sense. Now, it doesn't mean, just because something makes sense doesn't mean it's true, but it does, to me, explain at least a huge part of the experiencer community and these abduction accounts, specifically with genetic engineering. And I just want to go back to one of the points that was made about, you know, if they're advanced enough, then they could be able to do anything. I hear this a lot. If they can travel interstellar distances, then surely it means they can do this other thing and insert thing here. It could be, you know, create biology, create life from scratch. But, like, that doesn't necessarily track with me. Like, interstellar travel is a specific skill that does not have any relationship to genetic engineering or nanotechnology. And I think it's probably better not to ascribe abilities to these beings that if they really had, they would bother with genetic engineering in the first place. Because if they could just create life from scratch, they wouldn't need to abduct people and create biological building blocks from us. So what to me that suggests is a limitation. They aren't gods by any stretch. They're just extremely advanced. And maybe they can synthesize small amounts of compounds they need, but certainly not planetary-sized compounds. And maybe biology in the universe is extraordinarily rare, and our planet is like 1 out of 10,000 that has life as diverse and rich as you can be found here. And maybe because we're destroying that value, they're intervening to prevent that value from being destroyed so that they can acquire it for their own purposes. When I look at the situation we're in like that, suddenly everything lines up. It's like before we had Galileo, we saw planets going around us in these crazy spiral patterns, and we couldn't make sense of them. They all went in these helical kind of patterns that all were scattered around, and we couldn't make sense of it. And that was because we were assuming that the Earth was the center of the universe. But the moment we switched our position and we put the sun in the center, everything snaps into place. All the planets are now moving in a nice, even circle around a central point. To me, thinking about NHI in terms of resource acquisition and biological, you know, this is an incursion of nature and not something, you know, from our divine understanding, suddenly things just line up better. So, again, that's not a reason to insist that one way of thinking is true or not, but when things suddenly make sense, when you think about it in a new way, I find that compelling, and I think that that's a door worth kicking down. It's a premise worth investigating.
For sure.
If you have
So we're going to do hands. I want to welcome Star Captain up here. And I do want to center our guest here, Othello. So if you have a question for Othello and you'd like to come up, please raise your hand and be courteous. I'm not going to cut him off, please. But on that last note, Othello, I don't know if you go this far in sort of your speculation, but do you think...
So people speculate, right, that a lot of maybe the religions of antiquity perhaps were like sort of spawned or created by this NHI, right? Maybe to help us. But from maybe a different perspective, do you think sort of these ideas, these memes in a lot of religions of divine intervention could have also been put there as like overly welcoming of some, you know, advanced species or race?
I personally, this is just my personal belief. I there's no doubt in my mind that there are higher realities at play and higher intelligences that are, I would describe as non-corporeal. That is, they manifest in ways that are ethereal to us. So I think that there might be some kind of higher dimensional celestial administrative layer, let's say, to reality. And that's the realm in which we have reincarnation, near-death experiences, and possibly advanced kind of beings kind of coming here to help us evolve a bit. I think that's what the Jesus figure could have been. I think there could have been many people like this who kind of came here to move us forward because we were stagnated. I don't really know what actually happened, but that's my suspicion. So there's one aspect of it. And then there's another aspect, which is ancient visitation. Now, I've kind of been outspoken in saying that I think it's not a good idea to try to tie ancient visitation to current visitation for very good reasons. But that isn't to say I don't believe ancient visitation happened. In fact, I suspect that it did. But my impression about its effects on religion is not so much that they came and landed and gave us a religion. I think they came and landed and we made a religion out of it. I think we were dumbfounded and inspired and terrified, and it got woven into our lore. So I don't see it as being handed a blueprint and giving the humans a new way of thinking. I think of it as we are sort of very tribalistic, simple-minded people back in the day, and those encounters probably had a profound effect on the mythology and our cosmology as a species. And I think that those continue to ripple forward today and split off and branch and get reinterpreted and woven into religions of today. So there's no doubt in my mind that extraterrestrial influence and non-human intelligence plays a role in our religious mythology. But it's really, really difficult to disentangle and to interpret from our perspective looking backwards, because you end up having so many conflicting ideas and conflicting pieces of archaeology and history that sometimes line up, but seems to me that a lot of times they don't. I also tend to think that people overestimate extraterrestrial influence a little too much. They think that they were building temples for us. I actually think that humans built the pyramids. Probably not going to get a lot of praise for that idea, but I think I have a lot of faith in human ingenuity, and I think that when people say aliens built the pyramids, I'm kind of insulted. Like, you don't think we could have figured that out, is my answer. And then we get into these little debates about how did we lift these big blocks. It's like, I don't know the specifics, but I have a pretty good understanding of ancient Egypt history, but I'm no expert.
Right.
And so I don't want to go there because I'm going to be out of my depth in 10 seconds. There's probably people in this room who love to wax poetic about how the pyramids were built. But I think that that's a conversation for another space, because it deserves its own conversation, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry. So the point I was trying to get at is if these NHI influenced and maybe even created a lot of these different religions, that's a point people can speculate. But what I'm trying to say here is more like a common idea in a lot of these myths, specifically the Abrahamic ones, is the idea of divine intervention, right? So whether it's Jesus or Muhammad or whoever it is, something from the heavens, something from a higher plane, a different dimension, whatever, is coming here to help, right? It's benevolent. And do you think that meme in itself, right, could have been something sort of implanted into the human psyche, into the zeitgeist as a sort of like Trojan horse, like a backdoor type thing?
I think I don't know that Trojan horse is the right word. I think that as evolutionary beings with what I consider to be a sort of a soul identity complex or some kind of multi-life learning experience that the universe seems to represent. I think that we have innate spiritual gifts and insights that we're born with and that we either discover or we don't, that are nurtured or not nurtured. I think that's true for a lot of intelligent life in the universe and for the life that's here. I think they're spiritually dead compared to us. But I do think that there could be divine influence. What I'm not sure about is what is the nature of that influence, whether it is actually a burning bush, wine, water turning to wine, or is it something more subtle, like someone receiving messages, receiving voices, and then writing that down? That seems pretty common. I think that's probably their preferred method, is like a method of least interaction. That is, provide the knowledge and wisdom that we need at a time of great need, but then let us do the work, because that's the whole point, is that we're going to be the ones doing the work. So if there's divine influence, I don't think it's intervening in the circumstances. I think it's an intervention that is more about providing information and guidance to specific individuals in a way that does not hopefully turn into a religion, because the last thing you'd want is for someone to get this divine message and think, oh my God, I'm the chosen one. Hey, everyone gather around. I'm the new Messiah, which I think humans probably have a tendency to do. So it's tricky to give us these little tips without us running off into the woods and starting our own little compound. So I think in that regard, we could do a little growing up. But I think that probably captures the nature of what I suspect could happen. But again, I'm not the expert on divine intervention. I just suspect that there is non-human intervention on our planet now in a physical way, and there's no doubt in my mind that it's also influencing people on a personal level as well.
Yeah, really good. And I have some more questions, but we've had Star Captain up here for a bit, and he's been really patient. So the format of the space I put up top, although this isn't an experiencer space, so we kind of skipped ahead, but we're now in the Q&A section, right? And so, again, if you want to come up and engage in the conversation or ask a fellow a question, please do so. We are, you know, we're centering Ophelo here, so please have your questions or comments sort of directed at him if you could. But Star Captain, go ahead. Oh, and try and keep it under a minute as well, please.
All right. I got 2 points to make on the topic. Firstly, on cosmic propaganda, maybe something that they're seeking to sell through belief systems that aim to divide and conquer us. If you go back to the Tower of Babel story, prior to that, humanity was united. So something from the outside came in and divided us, and maybe that thing was divine, or maybe it was using mimicry, like animals do within our environment. Earth shows a lot of different potential on how biological weapons have evolved on our planet, whether it be porcupines that can shoot their spines, which, you know, we have technologically evolved into bullets, or animals that have armor that we have, you know, evolved into technologies like tanks that have armor. These are biological technologies that we have adapted and started to use as technologies within our technology tree. Their technology tree, based on where they come from and what's available on their planet, may be very different from ours. Our planet may present many more opportunities for things to demonstrate these type of capabilities than another. So they may be interested in our planet's technology tree and our biological technology tree and farming that, because maybe it doesn't exist on their planet. Maybe they mimic divine beings but are not actually, and use that in order to keep us in the state of predator versus prey, versus us being able to step up on their post-terrestrial level as equals and competitors. Maybe they would rather keep us down. Food for thought. What do you think on those topics?
I tend to agree. And I think it's smart to assume, and I'm using that dirty word, assume, that Earth has things they want. And we are destroying those things slowly but surely. And that when you destroy something of value in a universe that greatly covets that, it will intervene. And I know that's not a rosy picture. I know sometimes when I talk about this stuff, you might assume that I am a doomsday person. The truth is I'm not. The reason I'm not is because I do believe that human belief matters. And I think that there's a great emphasis being placed on what we believe about them. And the reason I think that matters is because I suspect to some degree they need our cooperation. They need us to be in line, and they want us to have certain assumptions and beliefs about them and their intentions. And I think that if we become unruly, not violent, but say protest what they're doing and demand transparency, not just from our government, but from them, that's going to make things much more difficult for them. I think what they want is a docile, compliant species that is ready to bow down and assume that they are here to uplift us and help us evolve. And what I think they don't want us to learn is that we are capable of that evolution ourselves, and that we have the power to evolve greatly, not just technologically, but spiritually, which is greatly needed at this time. And I think that that's a message of hope. I don't think that's one of doom. So, yeah, I do think that our planet has things they want. I strongly suspect that. And I think that it's clear to me, at least based on my understanding of abduction literature and cattle mutilations and the like, is that they, in fact, cannot synthesize these compounds, that they need to harvest them. But harvesting is extremely hazardous because they do not have biological immunity to our huge number of diseases present in our atmosphere. So it's much safer for them to only harvest on the ground and not try to, say, you know, grow cattle in their ship. Think about this for a second. Let's say, oh, why don't they just copy the cattle's DNA and grow the cow in a test tube? Well, a cow needs food, and it needs also rich bacteria that can only be found in our atmosphere, and its gut needs that biome to be intact. So for them to grow biological life aboard, say, a ship, or God forbid, on their own planet, it would immediately die because it wouldn't have any of those biology that it needs to survive. So in order for that to work, they would have to bring in a host of other organisms that would probably kill their entire species. So I think they can manage it on a small scale, but most of the encounters I hear about, these beings are wearing suits or you know, helmets, or they're hovering above the ground. They're not actually making contact with the ground. So what that suggests to me, at least a little bit, is that they're avoiding contamination at all cost. What I suspect is that these are beings who've evolved so far beyond us that they have destroyed their own planets and sterilized their own worlds long, long ago. These could have been beings that were a lot like us, but because of maybe too aggressive in their forest deforestation, they ended up incinerating and killing all the biological diversity on their planet, and now have to go and look for those resources elsewhere. And I think that might be a very common thing that happens to species as they get too advanced. Their intellect outstrips their planet's resources. So I feel like that is, it fits the picture to me. That to me makes sense, at least intellectually.
There's also another gap that would happen, that some stars have different metallurgical properties. So gold is more common around yellow stars like ours than it would
absolutely
be around, like, red giants.
Absolutely.
So some species may be forced to migrate because eventually metal does break down. If you build a civilization in space, you're still going to run into eventual fatigue of the metals, and you will need to restore and get new resources.
I think that's valid, is not to assume again that they are omnipotent and that their technology is immutable. I think it's likely that their technology needs to be topped up and improved. And I also have another theory, which is that there are probably heavier elements in the universe or in our local galaxy that are not available on Earth, which could be used as fuel sources or as ways to manipulate gravity. So it could be one of the reasons why we never developed, faster than light speed travel, is because we just don't have the elements necessary to do that on our planet. So who knows? I would say my guess is that while metals are extremely valuable and can be mined in probably a number of places, that I would venture a guess that biological life is by far the most rare form of resource. And because it's rare, it's the most valuable. I mean, we could be dealing with species whose populations number in the trillions. And when you have that much biomass, I mean, beings have to consume fuel. They have to eat. So a cow to us is just an animal that we, you know, sometimes slaughter for meat. But to them, one cow could represent, you know, $1 billion of value, you know, that could be turned into all these proteins and food sources and ways to, you know, mutate it and turn it into something else. Who knows? I mean, this is, again, you sort of have to make some educated guesses here. So I really don't know what they're using these materials for. I'm just looking at the picture and saying, I'm seeing trends here. I'm seeing evidence of extraterrestrial intelligence, multiple species, by the way, not just one, in competition. I think that whistleblower, I forget his name, is it Michael? He's like son of Abramin. I can't remember. He was interviewed by Jeremy Corbell and I think Knapp as well. And
Matthew Brown's
the guy. So yeah, he's talked about this too, that there's evidence that there are multiple species here in competition. And that tracks quite nicely with what I've been saying, which is that multiple species found us out and they're trying to elbow each other out of the way for who can become humanity's savior first. And maybe they'll coordinate. Maybe they'll do a false flag thing where they will create a solar flare and then block it from us. Maybe they will come and put out a bunch of forest fires. Maybe they'll intervene in a nuclear exchange and stop it from happening. There's so many ways that it could play out. And so I would just caution you guys with this idea, which is that if anything bad happens and aliens stop it from happening, like openly and proudly, call foul. Be like, hold on. Like, is that what we just really witnessed here? Or are we being bamboozled?
That's really good. So when I interviewed Chris O'Leary almost 2 years ago in 24, I forget the exact question I asked that provoked this response, but it was something like, you know, how can you assume to know the ethics of the alien, or how can you assume to know that they're evil? And his response to that was pretty good, which was, if something is taking away your sovereignty, if something is taking away your ability to act on your own behalf, right? They're not asking for consent. They're treating you like we treat cattle. That's all you need to know. Like, that is evil.
Kinda, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. I tend to agree with Chris on this point. He's been through hell. I've heard his story. It's really quite traumatic in many places, but he hates these beings' guts. But I think he would also agree that there's definitely good and benevolent beings out there. I don't want to make it sound like I don't believe they exist. But I have a problem with the argument that those beings are currently present, at least in any meaningful, measurable way. My suspicion is that they're non-interventionist, that they are standing back in order for us to have a chance of knowing who's friend and foe, because we can't tell them apart. They're too advanced and they can pretend to be anything. So my guess is that benevolent beings are watching our situation and hoping we figure it out, but can't intervene because that would create conflict and war. I don't think that they want to bring war to this planet because that would be a disaster, and they don't want us to become a liability. They don't want to come in and rescue us and then have to take care of us. What species would want to do that? Like, that would be a drag, and it would be bad for us too. So what I think is going on is there are good beings, there are bad beings, and I say bad as in detrimental, not ethically. I don't know what their ethics are. I'm just talking about the impact on human sovereignty. I think detrimental beings are here exploiting our planet and us for their own purposes, and that it is our responsibility to recognize this using our powers of discernment, using conversation spaces like this, listening to experiencers, researching what you can, and then in some sense coming together, not as a monoculture, but as a united species, that we sort of see our humanity first and foremost, and that we see our planet as something extremely valuable for our future as a species, and that it's our responsibility to protect and defend it from outside influence. And I think that's a good rallying cry to get behind. I feel like everybody should be able to get behind that idea. And you know, if you disagree and you think that there's beings that are here trying to help, I would just say, can't we just ask everyone to leave first? And if they were really benevolent, they would respect that. They would say, no problem. You know, you guys are new here. We'll give you some space. A benevolent being would do that, right? But yeah, it's just interesting how these conversations can devolve. I get a lot of pushback on this from some of the experiencer community who insist that their experiences were beautiful, divine, meaningful. And who the hell knows? Like, I'm not even sure what it is they're experiencing, and it's not for me to say. I just don't think that's a good enough reason to assume benevolent intent, that you have to look at the whole picture. You have to look at the whole experiencer community. You have to look at the evidence of their activities, physical and non-physical. And you have to put those together on the table and try to see what the picture is. And that's all I'm doing is, to the best of my ability, putting those pieces of information on the table and trying to interpret it in what I think is a responsible manner. And I want more people to try to do the same thing.
Yeah, I think that's a really strong point you just made. And right, we're discussing the nuances of a speculation right now, right? So it's based on a whole lot of ifs.
Absolutely, but absolutely.
If there is like a non-human intelligence interacting with us, and at least on an individual basis, right, people have asked it to stop intervening, and yet it continues to do that, assume there's some other intention, or there's something they want from you or from us.
Yeah, the one of the favorite refrains that I hear is, Othello, they're just taking us in the same way that we take animals to the vet. The animal doesn't know what's going on. It's very scared. It gets shots, and then it gets put in a cage, and it's all very scary. But we're helping the animal. And this argument just crumbles as soon as you start to really think about it. First of all, a pet is a trusted family member that you've built a relationship with openly without deception. Like you live in an environment, you share, you feed it regularly. You're its source of nourishment and its source of companionship. And you built a relationship on trust. And furthermore, you live on the same planet as that being, and your relationship to it is related to your biological history on this planet. An alien abducting someone is a completely different scenario. First of all, in abduction accounts, the abductees routinely report vivid communication with the entities, which suggests to me that they can understand us perfectly well, and they us, as, and back and forth. So the communication is two-way. You don't have two-way communication with your cat. You can try, but you're not going to be able to tell it what's going on, and it can't even conceptualize of the idea of consent, let alone provide it. But an advanced entity that can speak to you in plain English, taking you against your will, yet not informing you as to its ultimate intent, is in no way analogous to our relationship with pets. So I wish people would stop using that argument. It's a bad argument. There are so many bad arguments floating in these discussions that I have to routinely debunk. That's one that really bothers me the most, but it also makes sense, because if you've been taken against your will and you've had a traumatic experience, I think one way that you might cope with that is to say, well, maybe I'm just like a pet to them, and that was just a checkup. And that would be a really good way to conceptualize it if you had been traumatized by that experience. I don't know if that's always been the case for people, and I don't want to try to psychoanalyze people who've gone through that trauma, but I suspect that it could be playing a role in why that idea is so popular. So I really don't like that idea. There's a number of those. I call them like myths that I think are really popular in the literature and out in the world that I think are worth going over. I sent those to you if you're interested in going over them, or we can take
more. Yeah, questions. So I put them up top, but okay. Do you want me to read through them all at once, or do you want to go through one by one?
Yeah, go for it. You don't have to go in order. Any one of them that jump out to you that you want to talk about?
Yeah, no, these are really good. And I think you kind of based your sort of one-panel comic memes off of this that I thought were clever too. But so E.T. myths. These are Othello's E.T. myths. Number one, there's no evidence of E.T. visitation on Earth.
Yeah, that's one for, the Michael Shermers of the world. We don't need to talk about the evidence here. I think everybody in this room feels probably that there's something going on. We could go there, but there might be more sort of juicy debates to be had further down the list.
Yeah. So number two is ETs can't be here because nothing can travel faster than light.
Yeah, I mean, I think they found a way around that rule. Maybe they found a way to stretch and warp space. There's no rule that says space can't warp at any speed. I think there might be a wiggle room there. I'm not sure, but what I'm guessing is there's some way to manipulate space-time to shorten distances, or rather to shorten the time needed to travel between distances in a way that does not break any laws of physics. That would be my guess. But like, it would be pretty arrogant to say that no visitation is possible because of that rule. I mean, we keep learning new things about physics all the time. And I suspect that what we don't know is much bigger than what we do. So I think that one's an easy one.
Yeah, number three, humanity isn't interesting enough for ETs to visit. We have nothing they want.
Man, how many times have you heard that? I mean, I think that comes from the self-defacing kind of we're not special attitude that a lot of people have, especially if you're nihilistic about human activity and our bloody history. We tend to want to take ourselves down a peg as this way of kind of self-sacrificing righteousness. We're like, oh, we're nothing special. It's like, well, maybe we're not, but maybe our planet is. Maybe humans are just part of the flora and fauna here, and then that's what's actually interesting and valuable. So again, maybe an easy one to argue against, but that's my take on it.
Number four, any ETs visiting us must be morally superior to us.
My God. Yeah.
I just kind of made that one, right, with the type two civilization type thing.
Yeah. Well, it's not, I understand where that thinking comes from, but I do think it's a misinformed assumption because we have iPhones now. Are we more moral? Like, did our morality improve because we have technology? So I don't see technology as pushing forward spiritual advancement. I see them as two things running in parallel, and one can outpace the other. So I also think that if you're involved in genetic engineering and you start trying to turn your species into a different form, you could, in a way, erase or genetically remove parts of your own, you know, history and moral inclination to the point where you're more robotic than person. So I don't know. I think that it's possible that you could evolve to be spiritually advanced, but I think it's possible you could evolve to be spiritually dead. So I don't see, in fact, if beings are, you know, exploiting a young and naive race like us in the manner that seems to be implied by the evidence, then that suggests a moral deficit, at least to me. Now, if I'm making the mistake of anthropomorphizing here, so be it. But I think that's a better assumption to make, that we're not being let in. We're not being informed, because if we were, we would riot. So,
yeah. And number five is pretty similar, but we're like ants compared to ETs.
Yeah. And people love to make this comparison. Yeah, the problem with that is just one of scale. I mean, we're not dealing with beings that are 1,000 times taller than us, so we're much more of a force to reckon with. I think that if this being was standing in front of you, if it didn't have any technology, it would be just as vulnerable to a bullet as we are. That's my suspicion anyway. So I think that if we were really like ants to them, we would also have nothing to offer them. You would go out of your way to abduct an ant and try to tell the ant that it's, you know, that you're abducting it for good reason. If there was that much of an intellectual gap between us and the aliens, then I don't think that what we're seeing would be happening. What I think is a better analogy is us and apes, something like that, where the body physiology is similar, and there's an evolutionary path forward for that being that one day they could end up looking like the alien. Hard to say, but I think there's a lot of reasons not to frame us quite like that. That seems a bit too extreme to me.
Number six, ETs might be a native species, ancient ancestors, or time-traveling humans.
I mean, yeah, they might be, but they sure as hell aren't behaving like it. At least based on the abduction literature, there could be evidence of past visitation and genetic influence, but a lot of these theories to me fall apart. The native species one doesn't make sense to me, only because you would have seen evidence of a secondary archaeological history that evolved to the point where it developed technology that could escape the atmosphere. That is, they left Earth. But look at how long it took us to get where we are here today, and look at the mess we made along with it. And now we're a population of 8 billion, taking up most of the planet's space and resources, a lot of it anyway. For them to have leapt ahead or broken off from us, they would have had to expand in that manner as well. There's just not enough room and resources on our planet to support two species at the same time with that level of technology, and one is doing it in secret from the other. That just doesn't compute to me. And then the time traveling one, seems so silly to me that you would step in a time machine, go back in time, go back to your original planet and mess with your ancient ancestors. It's just very silly to me. I wrote a long essay about this. If you guys want to read, go into my highlights section on my page, and you can see I've written a lot about the time travel argument. I don't think it's necessary to go too deep in here, but I don't find those origin stories very convincing. I could be wrong, of course. I'm probably more wrong about a lot of things, but this is one that I think is it muddies the conversation when people bring this stuff in. Time traveling humans, it's like, really? I don't know. People find it convincing somehow. I always thought it was absurd, but you know, maybe that's me.
Yeah, these are good, and I still have a good list of questions I want to ask you, but they're provoking some more, so this is good. Number 7, ETs could have wiped us out. I'll get to those questions after this, by the way. Number 7, ETs could have wiped us out, but they haven't. That means they're friendly.
Yeah, it's the old, they haven't killed us yet, so they're our friends. How low is your bar that you consider someone a friend simply because they haven't murdered you and your family? Like, that's the lowest. That's a really terrible bar to set for benevolence. And I said this before in a few other comments, that there are fates worse than death. There are situations where you are utilized as a resource, or your sovereignty is subverted in a manner that is like a slow sort of strangling. Like, think about what happened to the Native Americans, for example. They weren't just murdered, like mass murdered, but they were eventually wiped out through disease and through land infiltration, and sometimes it was outright war. But they slowly and very, very slowly and very painfully sort of devolved and disappeared. So that to me is a much more devastating threat, that and one that's going to be invisible to us except when you look over a long period of time. So just because we're still here doesn't mean that they're friendly. So I think that argument is really easy to defeat, but it's really amazing how often I keep seeing that argument. I think that's pretty common for people who are new to the subject and they've only just started thinking about this topic, that they will offer that. Stephen Greer loves to say that a lot, though. If you look at his books and things he says in lecture tours, he's always saying, oh, they could have wiped us out ages ago. Why didn't they? It's like, maybe that's not their goal. And maybe their goal is something that involves some degree of exploitation. There's a huge range of possibilities in between killing everyone and leaving us alone. You just left out like 99% of all the other things that could be going on. So, yeah, that's an easy one to defeat, I think.
Yeah, and I'll read number 8, but you've already addressed this, and then I'll go to 9. ET abductions could be helping us, like how we take animals to the vet, right? You discussed that.
I want everyone here to shoot that. Anytime you hear someone make that argument, please shoot it down. It doesn't deserve to be so popular. I wish people would stop saying that. But
I think I've only heard that once. Like, I hear sort of derivatives of that.
I could be in the wrong circles. I think you hear variations of that, though. You know, like basically,
yeah, exactly.
Ways of framing abduction as positive or neutral. And I think that it makes sense from a psychological perspective that you would do that to help deal with trauma, or to just classify it in a manner that's less scary. There's a lot of fear aversion in a lot of these bullet points. So it's like, if this bullet point is true, then I can be less afraid. That's not always the reason things get believed the way they do, but I think fear avoidance is a big problem, because if you want to talk about something that's happening that's scary, you kind of have to face scary possibilities, but a lot of people don't want to do that. And I don't blame them. This stuff can be terrifying. But yeah, let's soldier on.
Yeah, thanks. This is great. Number 9, Earth should accept offers of advanced technology from ETs.
Yeah, this is a really tricky one and a really dangerous one. Greer is an outspoken pro ET kind of guy, and he's routinely discussed. He likes to villainize the military-industrial complex. I also like to villainize them, but he does it in a way that makes it sound like these lovely aliens have gifted us with this incredible technology, and it's our greedy military-industrial complex that has stolen this technology and have forfeited humanity's golden future, and that if only these mean government officials and black budget projects would release this life-giving technology to humanity, we could finally enter the golden age that we are deserved. And I think this is like a childish fantasy. That isn't to say we don't have technology that could do amazing things, but I think it's extremely irresponsible to implement and proliferate technology that you did not develop the discipline to attain yourself. It's like giving guns to, you know, a remote tribe on an island. Like, it's beyond the pale to me that any, this is why I think that they're not just immoral, they're amoral. That is, they will do whatever they want to gain an advantage. And I think, in a way, if you give technology to a species that's really unevolved and it grows to use and need that technology, you've guaranteed that that species will be in your debt forever. Because if we come to depend on some advanced energy source or something had exotic matter or that requires off-planet resources, we now have to go to them for those resources, and we have to pass their bars, and they're going to set limits on how we use it. We're just signing up for a form of indentured servitude. So I think it's just not a good idea to utilize technology that's from off planet. I think that's just a bad idea in general. I also don't believe the argument that we need it. People say we need this energy source. We're destroying the planet. It's like, I don't think so. I think we have the technology and the means on our own planet to solve the problems that we have as a species. I don't buy this idea that we need off-planet technology or expertise to reverse climate damage or to provide the resources and food that's needed for our species to be sustained. I do think we have to make some changes about the way we live. I think we have to live within our means. I think the planet has finite resources, but we need to get better at allocating those and using those. What I don't believe is that we need to use advanced technology from off-world. I think that's just a big mistake, and one that our government supposedly has walked straight into. Because when we saw it, we were like, oh, good, we can make weapons, or we can make this platform hover without thinking about the long-term effects. But that's what a naive species – that's a mistake that a young, dumb, naive species like us would make. So I guess I'm not surprised.
Yeah, and that provokes another question I have after this last one. But number 10, people report, quote, positive experiences with ETs. That means they're friendly.
Yes, my favorite fallacy. What qualifies a positive experience? If I drug your child and abduct them, and they have a hallucination where they've been spending all day hanging out with kitties in a garden, and then wake up back in their bed, they would report a positive experience. But there is nothing positive about that. So the notion of positivity is sort of a kind of like an incessant need for spinning things in a positive way, I think is a problem for this topic, specifically because you're dealing with such a massive power imbalance, being with the ability to abduct and then subvert your consciousness or, you know, give you these experiences, is clearly exercising power that you do not have and taking away agency that you have a right to maintain. So I have a big problem with people who frame this only as positive. And while I don't doubt that their experience was positive, I do not think that infers benevolence. I think a better metric of benevolence is, does this being respect my bodily sovereignty? Does it respect my rights as an individual being? Does it respect my planet and not plunder its resources or attempt to subvert human authority structures or intervene in the midst of our technological evolution? or genetically modify us or create beings modified from us in any way. Like, to me, none of that is a sign of benevolence. It's tough because a lot of people feel really strongly about this. They have wrapped it into their identity. They've, you know, gone on record talking about their sort of almost religious like affiliation and love with these loving beings. Now, it's possible they're having positive contact with a level of consciousness that I'm not aware of. The problem I have is people who say they were abducted, like, you know, taken against their will out of their bed, and then have a positive experience from that, or say that they were healed in some way. I don't think that's enough to infer benevolence. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah. Okay, so this has been really good, Othello. And I, like I said before, I think last night may have been the first time I had ever heard you speak in a space, but I really appreciate how thoughtful you are on this topic and just the way you come across and delivering some of your points here. We've got about 30 minutes. I want to be respectful of your time. It may go beyond that, but maybe use the rest of our time to engage in a little bit of critical analysis or maybe some pushback,
please,
to some of your ideas. And again, if anyone wants to come up and request a mic, feel free to do that. But we're going to remain respectful, and we're going to center the guest here. So
yeah, and I just want to say, I'll give a little disclaimer here, which is that like everybody has different experiences with this phenomenon and this topic. And I do not speak with authority, especially in regards to experiencers. If you had an experience that completely clashes with the stuff that I've laid out, I'm not going to debate with you because it's not my place to do so. You're free to share that experience, and I will happily listen to it. But I don't want to get into a space where I'm trying to challenge someone's personal experiences or their personal insights, especially if they've had what they consider to be direct contact. Because I don't think that's fair to the experiencer or to me, because how the hell what could I possibly say that would challenge that? So as long as it's more about the philosophy or about maybe there's a logic flaw or there's something I haven't considered or there's a piece of evidence that should be on the table too, I'm willing to have that discussion. Just wanted to give that little disclaimer before we start.
No, that's a really, really good disclaimer. And I totally agree with that point. But to your sort of philosophy or your methodology, I wanted to explore that a little bit. Like what can you say about the methodology you used in coming to these conclusions? Like what you cited the abduction literature before. Can you specifically like what sources are you drawing from to come to some of your conclusions?
It's a great question. If you go to my profile, and at the top of my profile, you'll see a link to a site. It's called othello.github.io. If you go to this site, it's basically literally a list of everything that I've compiled that I find compelling and that has influenced my opinion on this topic. And it's no punches pulled here. Just go through the list and just look through these links. Every single one of them has contributed to my beliefs. The Allies of Humanity briefings is definitely a really big influence. But I try not to use written material or like channeled material as like the basis for an argument. Like I read it in a book, so it's true. It's like, that's not the way I think about this. So the way I think about it is, how do I interpret the evidence in a manner that is beneficial to humanity? And so everything on that list in my resources page helps me to do that. But I don't proselytize. I'm not trying to speak from a podium and speak down on anyone. I see us as in the same boat. Literally, we're on the same planet. So our fates are intertwined. And so it matters to me that people think about this in a way that's beneficial to everyone. And I hope that I've at least given you all the impression that that's a noble cause and maybe a smart way to go about this. But I know that there are huge gaps in my understanding, especially historical knowledge of contact, ancient literature. There are people in this room much more qualified than me to talk about ancient visitation and mythology and more esoteric spiritual concepts. So I don't consider myself an authority on these topics. Maybe that's where I'll leave it.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm trying to find this graphic that I've posted a couple times, and I know there's been a few different versions of it, but basically Carl Nell has put this out a couple times, and like I said, he's sort of adapted it and updated it over the past few years, but it's basically his what's it called? Like UAP hypothesis on like potential morphologies. And it seems like a lot of your arguments seem well thought out, and you're clearly an intelligent guy, but they seem maybe simplistic in that they are objecting to a very specific morphology within sort of the hypotheses of what could be behind the NHI. You know, you seem to like, you're basically pigeonholing the NHI into the extraterrestrial hypothesis, it seems like.
Yeah, well, I would say I'm pigeonholing the ones that are engaged in resource acquisition that way. If there are beings who are here who are not doing that, they're more or less invisible to me. And it's not clear to me what their influence on our situation is, and it's not clear to me whether that should be our focus as a species. Like, we should be focused on the beings that pose the biggest threat to us. So I think it's a better idea to focus on that rather than what other beings could be here and what they might be up to and what realm they hail from. But I don't want to suggest that those beings don't exist. It's just that I find them to be less relevant and less pressing of a need for us to kind of disentangle. But please say more. Maybe I'm not.
Yeah. Well, and it's let's see, how do I put this? Like when we go back to your ET myths list, right, number 9, which you just spoke about a few minutes ago, should we accept offers from advanced technology from ETs? I mean, that's, you know, people hypothesize that every technology that we have was taken from the ether, right? A genie or a genius or a muse on the other side that's sort of, you know, inspiring us through some means.
Sorry, do you mean like an individual has an insight into a new type of technology, like on a personal level?
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's kind of different from handing us a device, let's say, especially one that relies on resources that can't be found on our planet. If it, you know, there's lots of interesting evidence of divine intervention, or at least inspiration, or mathematical and physical things, like Tesla, for example. He's described, like, he had a vision in his mind of what the alternator was, like the electric generator, and he designed a schematic based on that. That's really hard to explain away. So I don't see that quite the same way as seeding technology. When I say seeding technology, what I mean is an advanced entity with a fully functional device with its own power source or its own resources. It's put on the ground in front of us humans, and they say, here you go, take this and reverse engineer it and turn it into patents. So I need to be more clear on that. That's what I mean by seeding technology. What you're describing to me sounds more like some kind of extra dimensional inspiration. And while you could argue that it is a form of technology proliferation, I see that slightly differently in that it's occurring within the mind of a person who then has to go out and build it using the resources and expertise of the human beings around them. And whatever technology comes out of that, while it could be very advanced, it's conceivable we could have come up with this ourselves, and that the only thing we got was a little tip off. But it's hard for me I should admit, though, that you could be seen as a form of manipulation. So I maybe would classify it differently from technology proliferation and sharing. It's tough to say. I would say I feel like our spirituality is lagging behind our technological ability. Sometimes I wonder how much of the technology we have today is actually derivative from non-human technology. It's hard to say. There's a lot of people who claim pretty strongly that a large number of patents and technologies we have, like fiber optics is one. The transistor, I've heard, even is derivative. I don't know what to make of those claims. It's hard to prove one way or another. But I think what's important is that we don't technologically advance so fast that we strip our planet's resources and make it so that we have to rely on others for our survival. So that's what I'm trying to avoid.
I see, yeah. And I guess I'm going a little more meta, and it seems like some of your conclusions or hypotheses you have are based on like a very physical cost benefit analysis, or like threat analysis, you could say, right? Where it's like,
yeah,
resource extraction and a very fit, you know. But who's to say some of these technologies, and this is kind of what I was getting at earlier too, with like the divine intervention, that meme in itself, right? Something coming from the heavens and being seen as a benevolent you know, entity or force that's here to help us, that in itself could be used to help make us more compliant, right, throughout time from these visitors coming from another galaxy or another dimension, whatever. And yeah, so it's kind of a similar, like, who's to say that these technologies, while like the direct impact isn't extracting any resources from us, or I mean, you actually could say they are taking our sovereignty away to a degree, I think. But yeah, you know what I mean?
I do. I think it's tough to know whether the influence is for our benefit or theirs. I feel like the most beneficial thing for us as a species is that we live within our means, that we maintain sovereignty and control of our own destiny and of our genetics as well, and that we do not outstrip the resources of our planet. And to me, any force, influence, idea, or technology that helps us do that, I'd have to classify as good. It's just that I am leaning away from technology specifically as a way to do that. I think that we need to change the way we are using our technology. I don't think that the solution necessarily involves new or novel technology, especially not off-planet. But yeah, it's a very physical discussion we've been having. I've been talking a lot about technology and genetics and stuff, but I've touched on the spiritual stuff as well. It's not that I think that it's not real. It's that I think it's a different hierarchy of discussion. It's a higher level. And I think there's too much crosstalk between these two realms that I think isn't really happening. I think that people are saying that what's happening here is about a divine war, and that what's happening is related to afterlife and stuff. And I'm hesitant to draw those lines and connect them. My impulse is to not do that, only for the reason that we're not in a position to verify it, at least not as a species. There's personal verification of these things. People can say and experience things that proves it to them, but I don't know how you build consensus around that. I don't know how you galvanize a pro-human movement based on those very tenuous, ethereal, transient connections that are difficult or impossible to prove to oneself, let alone verify for a whole society. So I kind of leave it unanswered. I think it's okay to explore that, by the way. I think there's lots of great spaces that do that. But I don't personally go there. My focus is more on our responsibility to our planet and our reason for being here. I think there's a bigger story there. I think that's a story that's worth investigating.
I see. Yeah. So you're approaching this more from like a human existential point of view.
Yeah. Yeah. Sort of like, you know, you came into this world with nothing, you know, no vision. You're in a dark place, and suddenly you're born and you develop your senses and your faculties. You learn about the world, and then you have this very limited brain that can only do so much and see so much. And I think that's the point. Like, as much as there might be spiritual realms, as much as there might be other realities, I choose to stay focused in the present and just accept my limitations as a physical biological being. And while I may have a divine source, I may be more than just a physical human, I think that my job as of this moment is to focus on my planet and my species. So that's a personal choice, I guess, but I do think it's the right one for humanity. And I think I think that that's not a dangerous position. I think that's a pretty safe one. And we can talk about the spiritual stuff all day long. I think that there are physical matters at play here, and I think we should address them and not try to recategorize them as something else. I think there's a lot of that going on. People trying to categorize it as tied to, connected from, or derivative of higher realities. And while that may be true technically, I'm not convinced that that's the right way to frame our situation, and it's not the right way to help us take action, because you've got a lot of people on this planet who don't think that way. And if we're going to have any kind of consensus, and I've heard people say they don't like the idea of consensus, but I do think we should just agree on the basics. Like, we live on a planet. It's going around the sun. We have limited resources. We are biological beings. We live in an atmosphere. We consume fuel. We communicate using vibrations in the air. Like, these are just very basic realities that we all experience. And I think it's okay to build your understanding of yourself and the world using those ingredients. That isn't to say don't have a spiritual life, but I think it's a good idea not to mix your spiritual life with the origins of NHI. And when they're intertwined, I think that people can get into trouble. That's my personal opinion. A lot of people don't feel that way. They mix the two happily, mix the two together.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point right there, especially. So I think it's really cool that you've taken the topic this seriously and you've combed through this literature. And that actually is bit of information that really has yet to come to light. I know when I was at the Archives of the Impossible event last year in Houston, so they are taking all of the letters that Ann and Whitley Strieber received after his book came out, and it's tens of thousands, or at least over 10,000, like, letters, right, of people who had experienced similar things. And then they're combining that, and this is what the Archives of the Impossible are at Rice University. They're combining that with the clinical notes from John Mack's therapy sessions, I guess. I'm probably butchering this or using maybe some of the wrong technical words, but they're using all of those notes, which that's the tricky part, right? Because they have to comply with the HIPAA laws, and you know they can't be like divulging anyone's medical records.
Yeah,
but they're using all of that. Go ahead.
I was agreeing. I was saying, yeah, that gets tricky when you're talking about personal cases. There's a lot of sort of secrecy and fear about people's personal information getting leaked.
Yeah, and for good reason, right? But that's just one of the things one of the hurdles they sort of have to get around in doing this. But basically, they're getting all that information from both those sources, and they showed pictures. They're just boxes and boxes, like crates of all these letters, all this literature from firsthand people. And they're using AI to analyze, each of these letters, each of these, therapy, all the notes. And yeah, and they're like collating all of them and categorizing all, and they're trying to extract, right? They're trying to find trends. They're trying to find like, repeated themes. And, I think it's, I'm going to interview the guy who gave one of the, I don't want to call it like a, it almost felt like a lecture, really. But I'm going to interview him and try and help people see like what's coming, because no one really talks about this. But I think that's, it's not just an author, right, sort of giving his theory on all this, but it's taking actual firsthand accounts that reported to both Strieber and John Mack, and trying to see if there are any like common themes, because that is one of the things with the experiencer accounts that I've found is there's so, the variety is just, people have such vastly different, like wildly different experiences with this paranormal stuff. And it's, yeah. Sometimes it kind of leaves me baffled and just like, is there really, like, is this,
I mean, right, we talked earlier about like how this NHI, this other intelligence, engages in deception. How are we to, like, how are we to take any of these experiences as like what actually they are, right? Are they presenting as something else?
But yeah, you hit the nail on the head there, which is that this is part of why I think it's really difficult or almost impossible to only use the written letter of the experiences themselves as a way to interpret the bigger picture. And I think if you're dealing with a degree of deception, that is, if we're deliberately being misinformed, then this is exactly what I would expect to see, which is tons of different experiences that conflict with each other and that don't give you any coherent picture. Why would a species that's trying to exploit us want us to even have a coherent picture? It seems to me that their goal would be to create as much confusion and misdirection as possible. So it tracks that these experiences would be so difficult to stitch together, which is why I tend to focus on the physical reality of their experience first and say, we can all agree that these people say were taken against their will, let's say that's something they all have in common. Well, to me, that's all the information I need because a violation has already occurred. So it doesn't matter what the experience was after the fact. To me, the violation was the taking of someone against their will. And the rest is to me irrelevant. In this specific circumstance on this planet, I find that irrelevant. But there's still more in there we could be missing. And so I don't want to call myself a researcher of abduction stories. I'm definitely not. There's people with more authority than me on abduction literature, so I would defer to them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it remains to be seen, and that's why I'm anticipating, like, what they eventually come out with at the Archives of the Impossible.
It's going to be fascinating, and it would be really, I would be really keen to see what the AI teases out. There could be some useful insights. So, yeah, looking forward to
it. Yeah, for sure. Sorry, all of that was sort of like a lead up to a question of like, it sounds like you've poured over quite a bit of literature in your interest in this topic. And even though you're not an experiencer, you know, you've taken in a lot of data, and I'm just curious, like, what other conclusions or even trends or patterns have you seen in the literature about, the paranormal?
Man, so many, there seems to be, especially in Dr. Carla Turner's work, there seems to be an inordinate focus on human gestation, impregnation, implantation, and of even abduction scenarios where people are brought into a room where they are handed a being that's half human, half ET, and they're asked to nurture it and provide for it, and then also interacting with young children who look sort of alien and like teaching them how to tie their shoes and like put on clothes. This really wild stuff. That seems to be a pretty common theme, and I think it's David Jacobs as well. The patients that he's worked with report a lot of similar stuff. So the whole hybridization story is pretty common in a lot of that literature. It's pretty hard to shrug off. I mean, these are very pragmatic physical experiences that people are describing. So I think those themes are really worth investigating. Not everybody who's experiences abduction goes through that. Sometimes it's just they're on a table. There's things being put into their skin, the burn marks. They can't move. Sometimes something is taken from inside their reproductive cavities and from their rear end, like this is where the anal probing thing comes from. So there's seems to be a high degree of interest in our biological reality, that is on our bodies, on our reproductive systems, and some kind of nurturing, caring role that happens with some kind of hybrid being. So those are pretty stark images, and the regularity and the specificity of those images is what startles me. And then you can have someone who says they were taken and they had this wonderful psychedelic loving experience and that they got to see all these really cool 3D movies. So, you know, how do you square that with the other thing? I think there's a lot of different explanations. One is they were taken by a different sect, a different species that's here for different reasons. Or it could be, you know, one branch of their efforts is psychological operations, that as much as they need people for genetic reasons, they also need a willing population of humans ready to declare their, you know, declare their admiration and love of the alien overseers. So maybe there'll be some moment in the future where those individuals are turned on or activated, and suddenly they're out in the streets corralling us all towards the ships, saying, come get on the ships. Have you heard the phrase, don't get on the ships? That's pretty clever. I like that phrase. Definitely don't get on the ships. Not until they promise not to use their mind beams on you.
Yeah, I think we do run in slightly different circles. I don't know that I've ever heard that one.
Oh, clever, well, though. It could be, you know, it's fringe.com who's said that. And I don't know if she coined the phrase. I've just seen it a lot in some of the circles I'm in. But yeah, we definitely could be hanging out in different circles. And my circles could be really small and insufficient. So I don't want to come across as like this well-traveled UFO expert. I'm definitely not. But anyway, I don't know if I answered that question.
No, yeah, that was good. And I love Fringe. She was one of the first interviews I did, I think spring of 23, but she's come a long way and certainly has a lot of traction with her sort of series.
Yeah, she spends a lot of time in those kind of more esoteric, ethereal realms, and she doesn't subscribe to the aliens as extraterrestrials hypothesis. She's more as demonic. There's a lot of religious belief tied in with that as well, maybe from Christian ideology.
Definitely.
I don't want to speak for her. This is my impression on the material that she shared. But one thing I like about her is that she's definitely pro-human, pro-human sovereignty, and anti-NHI incursion and influence. So I think it's good to join hands with people whose opinions about the NHI differ from yours. I've tried to do this. I'm not always good at it. But I think it's important that we find some common ground. And I think that's one way to start. That's one of the reasons I stick with the physical stuff, is because I think whatever these beings are and what they represent, I think we can all agree that there's a physical reality to it, a measurable one that's visible in the sky as anomalous craft, and of physical beings that seem to be taking people at an inordinate number of times. So I think it's okay to start with that sort of physical reality and then build a consensus on what the human response to that should be based on that alone. Because that means more people can get on board and more people can agree to say, yeah, I support this. So that's why I'm kind of hesitant to go into the spiritual stuff, because you can kind of lose people with that. Like, you're going to cut out anybody who's not religious right away as soon as you start talking about demons. That isn't to say they aren't demons. It's just, I don't know. Let's stick with what we know. It's as small enough as it is.
Yeah, one, it's sort of like, there's a pre-existing belief system that's like a prerequisite almost to even engage in that. And do you put Fringe in? Because I know earlier you mentioned like sort of how religion or Christianity specifically can sort of color or like what's the word you used?
I mean, influence, I think, is right.
Yeah, but to a point where it might like dilute what actually is going on.
I think it's true that religion can confuse the situation. But if the religious proclamations of Christian dogma are true, then reasoning from those is only natural. So it's not my place to say that they're all invalid and false. Personally, I don't find all of those arguments convincing in light of the evidence that I've seen. But I also think that this could be just a semantic argument. In other words, what I call an extraterrestrial, someone else calls a demon, and that those are both true, perfectly valid and true statements. So it's hard for me to say. I don't have access to those other realms, and without visiting those realms and interviewing these beings in a way that I'm not subject to their manipulation, how could I possibly know? The thing that's tricky for me with the demon thing is that I find it to be somewhat of a disempowering take, because if you believe they're demonic, then that sort of opens up a lot of another row of questions, which is, okay, if they're demonic, where do they come from? Who's their leader? what do they eat? Where do they sleep? Are they physical? Are they not? What powers do they have? What powers do we have against them? It's like it becomes this Gordian knot of confusion and supposition that I find to be, in some cases, poisonous to the discourse of what the human response to NHI should be.
It's disempowering, maybe.
Disempowering. And that doesn't mean that they're not demons. I guess I'm just trying to deal with the physical reality first as a starting point, and then extrapolating what our responsibility should be from that. But it could still lead us to some really weird places. Like, those things could be true on some level that I'm just not aware of. So I'm not omniscient, and I don't have access to those realms and that information. People who come into spaces sometimes say with absolute certainty that that's what these beings are and represent. And who am I to say otherwise?
Yeah, that's a really good take. So we are right at 2 hours, and I want to be respectful of your time, Othello. Just, I guess, last call for anyone else who might have a question or a comment, or they want to engage Othello in any way, and then we'll probably wrap up shortly thereafter.
Yeah, and feel free to engage me out in the interweb. I'm on this platform a fair amount, and happy to engage anybody in any debate. I'm as fallible as the rest of them. I'm one tiny little person with this tiny little opinion. But I do think that consensus building is important. And I hope that people have an appetite for that. And if you're interested in engaging in that and shifting your understanding of NHI, feel free to visit the resources that I've collected, but also visit the resources of other people who are here. Like Tom Montauk has done so much writing on this topic. Like, he's, you know, one of the most researched individuals I've ever encountered. He's done spaces that were like 8 hours long, you know, talking about this stuff. So if you ever have the privilege of getting to be in a space with Tom, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I guess we're in one now. We have Tom here with his hand up. What's up, Tom?
Hey, guys. Super awesome space. Othello, it's good hearing your voice. It's good hearing how logical and precise and tactful you are about this topic. It's very good to hear that. So thanks to you, and thanks to UFO Intros for hosting this space. There is one thing I really wanted to get in before you close out the space, and that's to ask you about what you envision as the path forward for humanity. Hmm. What do you envision? What is your hope if, like, everything turns out well? You know, everything goes well with how we deal with the NHI situation. How do you think that might play out? What would it look like in the end state?
Man, that's a good question, and it depends on so many things, because I feel like we're in this weird multidimensional chess game where you can't see very far into the future. There's a lot of things going on. There's potential nuclear struggle. There's environmental degradation. There could be astronomical phenomena. There could be multiple species and beings hailing from different realms with different agendas. What I can say is my hope is that no matter what happens, whether it's a false flag, a earthquake, a whatever type of cataclysm or triggering event occurs, that humanity doesn't get led down the wrong path and start believing something that's not true. In other words, we start to give power to other beings. We give them license. We give them liberty. We give them access. We set aside land for them to use. I don't want to see that happen. What I want to see happen is the moment there is a admission from the government or a open proclamation from NHI of their presence of any kind, that there is an immediate response from the public that we didn't invite them, that this is not what we want, that we do not want this kind of contact, and a demand for amnesty, for transparency and accountability. I don't know how that would play out. My fantasy future that I imagine for humanity is that we kick up so much dust and are so unruly and so angry about this contact that they say, oh, crap, we lost control of the situation. We have no choice but to leave. And they leave. And then we are here to take care of our planet and declare our sovereignty, and that if benevolent beings who are waiting nearby are observing this, finally can land and visit without getting murdered by these other factions. And we can finally have actual open, benevolent contact with beings who are non-interventionist and who only want to help inform us on how best to survive out here, because the universe is a difficult place to live. I'm sure you all feel it. Earth is like, this is like DEFCON. Like, we're, this planet is like, if you're here right now, you're a badass. It's not hard to be on planet Earth right now. So my hope for the future is that we maintain our sovereignty as an independent species, that we learn to live within our means, that is within our solar system. I think it's cool to go to other planets, but let's stay within our own backyard and learn to grow and spiritually develop and to express our talents, our art, our music, our cultures, and to be proud of who we are and not fall into this trap of self-effacing commentary and self-loathing, which is something we've been trained to do. I think we have incredible gifts and insights to offer the universe, like long-term, and it would be a real shame if those were snuffed out by commercial interests who just see us as a biological resource and who don't appreciate our spiritual and intellectual gifts. I mean, I know we don't feel so special. We feel unruly and messy and warlike, but I think humanity has a lot of beautiful characteristics and artistic talent and insight that I think is worth protecting. So that's a very long answer to your question, but that is my ultimate hope, is that we can make connections with societies that respect and honor what we bring, instead of finding a way to exploit us. And I think we have to be vigilant about that. I don't think it ends here. It's like, if we manage to kick these guys out, it could still happen again. So I think we need to learn those hard lessons and make sure that we can defend ourselves in the future.
Thanks, Tom. That was good. Anything else? We've got one more speaker that we can get to after that. All right. I think that's it from Tom then. Chad, welcome.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, Tom and I have talked on and off, but this is the first time I've been in his space with him. So just want to listen and hear what people think.
Yeah, well, it's been a really good conversation, Othello. Thank you for doing this. I think you have a fascinating perspective, and you're very well spoken. And I appreciate sort of the respectful dialogue that you've allowed me to engage with you today. So that's been really good. I want to ask you, like, who in the public conversation do you take especially like seriously or think might be underappreciated?
A lot of names come to mind. So let me think. So Ted Rowe, he's at UAP Med, the guy at started UAP Med. I like his commentary a lot. Who am I thinking of? This is so dumb that I'm forgetting his name. He's written about USOs, underwater submerged objects.
Tim Gallaudet?
Tim Gallaudet.
Richard Dolan?
Dolan, thank you. So yeah, Richard Dolan is another one who I think is thinking about this in the right way, although his focus right now is largely on observation of anomalous flying objects and not into the abduction space. But I think he's good. Of course, I'm a fan of Reed Summers and Marshall Summers, their work. I think Reed's put out a ton of really great content and his Emergent podcast also. He has a lot of people on his podcast that I think he's doing something similar to what I'm doing, which is trying to like move the discussion in the right direction. And honestly, the list is small. Like, sadly, I wish I had a big, long list to give you of people who I think are doing this right. But unfortunately, I think it's small. It's part of why I've been motivated to join the fray and start speaking out, because I feel like we need more people speaking in this way. There are tons of people on this platform who I think are also doing that, who I'm friends with. So I guess I could name drop a few, like Matt Hurley. He has a website called badaliens.info, and he does a lot of more of the work on the ground of like looking at abduction and specifically animal and human mutilation cases. So he's not afraid to look at that really scary stuff to try to piece together what's going on. But yeah, a lot of those people you can find on my resources page, whose books that I've been promoting, Carter Kerner, Timothy Good, David Jacobs, there's a guy named Christopher O'Brien, who's a cattle mutilation expert. I would look at him as well. Yeah. Not sure if that's a comprehensive answer, but.
No, that's good. I just, there's just been so much in the news, right? With all these, you know, UAP tranches and all this, you know, apparent disclosure that's being slow dripped or whatever. Do you have any thoughts on all that stuff?
On the sort of disclosure theater? Yeah. Right now we're sort of being primed to sort of vilify our own leadership and distrust our own leadership. I think that's a machination of NHI influence to some degree, that we are being conditioned to hate and distrust our own human leadership, which creates a power vacuum, which a non-human intelligence would be only too happy to fill. So because we have such a low degree of trust in our institutions, we are banging the door down and demanding disclosure from ourselves, which is so hilarious to me, because the beings who could disclose this all could do it in 10 seconds. Just fly over every major city, park your UFO for like an hour straight. It would be on every news station in the world instantly. You'd have disclosure in 10 seconds. So why is it our responsibility? And I've heard people say, oh, they're trying to raise our consciousness, or they're playing, you know, it's a slow drip, or, you know, they don't want to spook us. It's like, if we're not in a position where we're ready for contact and we can handle it, then it would be immoral to contact us in the first place. So I don't understand that position of, I do think we should demand transparency from our government. Don't get me wrong. We should kick down this door. We should demand accountability, especially if people have been killed because of NDAs that they've signed. There's a lot of evidence that I've seen to imply that some of the NDAs that are keeping these secrets have lethal consequences. I mean, imagine if you were brought into a room and told this is an alien artifact, and if you ever tell anyone about it, not only will you be killed, but so will your wife and kids. Like, would you ever spill the beans? Like, I don't think I would. I don't have the strength to murder my own family to protect the secrets of my government. So if that's what's going on, then it explains some of the secrecy that we're dealing with. And those degrees of secrecy have consequences, and I think that there is a accounting that has to happen. So truth and reconciliation, there has to be some degree of amnesty, which is a bummer, because as much as we despise the people who have kept this from us, they'll never come forward if they believe that the price of doing that is that they will be permanently incarcerated or killed. So it's a tricky situation, and we have to find a way to coerce them to say what they know in a manner that ensures that they will be honest and that they will be forthcoming. And we have to make sure they are not doing so under duress or in a way that might influence the answer they give us. So it's a really tricky situation. So yeah, demand transparency, demand disclosure, but demand it from the beings. You know, look at the sky, say, why don't you show yourself? Like, I think that's what every person should do. Maybe literally. Maybe not go out in the sky. Fuck it. Why not? Go outside and scream, what are you doing? Or go away. Like, I mean, actually, if every human being did that, I think they would be freaked out. They would notice. And
yeah, well, and that's definitely like a different message than I hear from someone like Fringe or Chris O'Leary, right, who are very much like, do not be inviting these things into your life.
Oh, so definitely I agree with them there, is don't invite this into your life, for sure. I don't know that you'd have a choice, though, if they've chosen you to be their next experiment. But I do suspect that people who are inviting these experiences are, in a way, saying to the beings, hey, over here, I'm really easy to manipulate. I'm really easy to influence. Tell me anything that makes me happy, and I'll follow you. That's what you're saying when you're talking to the sky and saying, come take me, or come show yourself. you're making yourself, you're opening yourself up to something that you don't really understand. And this isn't a wildlife safari. We're not trying to make contact with giraffes on the savanna. You know, we're dealing with a higher intelligence. So if we're dealing with a higher intelligence, that means that our methodology and ways of contacting them is we're not the ones with the power in that situation. So that was a bit of a ramble. Sorry, I think I kind of lost track of what we were talking about. But
no, that was good. That was good. This has been a really good conversation, Othello, and I hope to hear you in spaces more. Of course, you're always welcome here. Any final thoughts you wanna bookend this conversation with before we close up?
I guess this topic is messy. It's richly human. It's deeply complex. It's self-contradictory. It reaches back into history as far as we can see, and it has implications far into the future. I do think there's never been a more consequential time to be alive, because in the past, we didn't have global communications networks that could instantly share your ideas and thoughts to other people. But today, in this world, we do. And with that great power comes great responsibility. Because we have this incredible technology to communicate, it's a double-edged sword. We're able to communicate and come together and share ideas, but we're also opening ourselves up to influence, and some of it negative. So just be aware of the power of the glowing rectangle in your pocket. It's a portal to really great, healthy things, and it's a portal to some really awful, self-destructive things. So if your relationship to this topic is isolating and separating you from your friends and family, reevaluate your position, reevaluate your relationship to the topic, and try to get out in the world and try to make sure that your life is in order. I used this topic as an escape method in the past, and I had an unhealthy relationship with it, I think. It didn't destroy me, but it set me back. So I've shifted my focus on my personal life and my career, and building those foundations for my life, I think, is what's put me in a position where I have the privilege to speak about this. So I would encourage you all to you know, take care of your health and your wealth and well-being first. And then once you've built a foundation for yourself in your life, that's a better place to start from with this topic. Because otherwise, this topic has a tendency to fractionate thoughts and fractionate your life in ways that I don't think are always healthy. So take care of yourself first, and then take care of your family and your planet second. I do think that our planet is an absolute gem. I think it's just an incredible gift, and I think it's our job to take care of it and not to dominate it, but to use it to survive and to live within our means. I think that's the message I would want to leave you guys with. As much as the ET stuff is interesting, we are extraterrestrials. We are evolutionary beings. We're probably more alike these beings than unlike them, and I think that's an uncomfortable reality we should probably get used to. Is that the universe is teeming with life, and we're just one of countless examples of it. And it's a survival game. It's a difficult, stressful universe to live in, and you have to contend with other forms of life. I think that's something we're just going to have to accept. So, but more power to you, and I hope we can build consensus on these spaces. So in the future, if you're in the space, I think it's good to bring up sovereignty. It's good to bring up our relationship to the planet. I think it's good to bring up our rights as individual beings, that we have the right to not be manipulated and exploited. So my hope is that people will start to think that way, and that will hopefully ripple out into the world and manifest in ways that benefit our society and benefit our future as a species.
Yeah, that is a really great message to end on, right? And trying to build consensus anywhere, but especially on this topic, it's a lofty, lofty goal there. You got a fellow, but it's a great message.
It's pretty lofty.
And I think, but I actually do think, like what you said about like building the foundations of your own personal life first, especially when it comes, I mean, really anywhere in life, but on this topic, is so important. And that's something I needed to hear, honestly. But Paul Vidal said this to me really early on, and I'm not sure if he got it somewhere else, but I think it's really true. He said, do not identify with ufology. Like, don't identify with the topic itself. That can be really dangerous. And, yeah, I think it's even not just like for your personal life and your own like spiritual or emotional well-being, but, on the topic itself, I think it can cloud the way people think because they're so invested in a certain thing being true that it clouds sort of their ability to reason and to deduce.
I agree, especially if you're looking for something from the phenomenon. If you see the phenomenon, I'll put that in quotes, as something that is going to personally benefit you or is going to prove your enemies wrong, or you are going to come out on top, that once they do their thing, you're going to be praised for having seen it coming, I think that is a recipe for disaster. I think it's much better idea to frame your relationship to this topic in survival terms, in terms of what is going to maximize your chance of survival and maximize humanity's freedoms.
Yep. Yep. And for me, like, this is just really a passion project for me. I've invested way too much time in it. And I think that was a message maybe I specifically needed to hear. So I appreciate you saying that. And
I wanted to just say one more thing before I cut you off there, that I think what you're doing is good and that these spaces are valuable. So please continue to have them. Definitely not aimed or criticism. It's not a criticism.
Oh, no, I know.
But I think you were doing a good job of thinking about it and how it relates to you. And I think especially as someone who hosts spaces in this domain, that's a question we have to contend with. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess all I'm saying is I needed to hear it. I'm not saying you said that because of me, but I appreciate the kind words and I appreciate the encouragement I get from a lot of people, right, who are trying to encourage me to stay focused on this little UFO intros project and not being like a reactive drunk in spaces towards people. So like Jake Raz and Grider and Y-Wolf and Steve Austin, Sombro, Marie. I mean, there's a whole list of people that have really, Anthony, right, you're a big one, have tried to help encourage me to do this. And I think it's a fun project, and I do intend to keep doing it and start porting things over to YouTube in like a more visually enticing way, put some of these experiencer accounts I've gotten from people into like a animated form, you know, so you can look forward to that. I did put my Buy Me a Coffee up top if you want to do that, but of course, totally optional. But Ofello, thanks again. This has been an awesome conversation, and look forward to talking with you more in spaces.
Yeah, I'll try to not be so much of a stranger. I'm hesitant to join spaces a lot when there's a lot of conflict going on in the space. Sometimes there's some shit talking. It makes sense. People are having fun. But if there's a space that I feel like is being managed in a respectful way and that people are being brought up, I was in a space with Doomer last night. That was really, really good. It was a lot of different opinions. So there's a lot of disagreement going on, but it was really healthy debate. So I'm okay with debate. Debate's fantastic. So the more spaces we can have that encourage that friendly and sort of well-meaning communication between people with different perspectives on this, the better off we will be. So, yeah, I hope to participate in that as much as I can.
Definitely. Yeah, no, I listened in anonymously last night, and that was a really good space. So, cool. Thank you, guys. Tom, thanks for coming up to speak, and y'all have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, everyone.